time regarded like a Chiefs and Pirates match, where we get there before the first tip off. Let's get there on time. Thank you. So on that note, I should just add, for the benefit of all members, as you know, our program was changed, so we will be in the house this morning as well. And we have confirmed to the Honourable Froelich that should the bells be rung, we will just go down. It may be a vote or this or that and quorum issues. We will go down. But we have also informed SABS about that. That's right. But other than that, we hope to finish at 11 o'clock at the latest. On that note, can we please have the adoption of the agenda? Thank you very much, Honourable Mantashe, seconded by. Thank you very much, seconded by. Just amazing that one knows people for so long and then you forget who they are. Quorum. Must be the issue on that list the other day. Right. Now, we have a lot of Korenhofs. You may not be aware of that, Honourable MacPherson, and they mistakenly had the wrong Korenhof down on the list the other day. Right, can we move immediately now to yourself, Minister, and I'm sure just while you are there, you will note that with SABS, you'll note everyone who is there, but let me welcome your DDG, Garth Strachan, Mr. Damana, the Chief Director. I just don't see him around, but I'm sure he must be here. Mr. Madupe, Ms. Shabalala, Media Liaison, Department of Trade and Industry, and Dr. Michel Makulu, Chief Operating Officer. All right, now, Minister, I'm relying on you to introduce the rest as and when they come up, or they can do so themselves.
Well, thank you, Chair. I was only planning to introduce, if you haven't done so, but you did, is the Chief Executive Officer of the South African Bureau of Standards, is Dr. Bonnie Michel Makulu. Okay, so she's going to be doing the main presentation. I'm just going to introduce the topic and then later on participate in the handover of certificates, because what we're doing today is we're handing over local content verification certificates to the first recipients of these, and they will be from a particular company that will be announced later on. That is involved in the manufacture in South Africa of bus bodies. So let me just give a little bit of background before the presentation kicks in. As I'm sure members of the committee are very well aware, in June 2011, there were new regulations introduced under the PPPFA, the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act of Treasury. And these allowed for designations on local content, and this is applicable to purchases by government entities and organs of state at all spheres of government. The first of these were implemented, or the practice notes were issued after December 2011, when the regulations came into force, and they basically said that all organs of state had to procure on different product lists, and you'll remember they included some regular purchases by government departments of things like workwear, of things like foodstuffs, as well as a number of inputs into the infrastructure build program. There were things like electricity transmission equipment, and so on. And when these notes come into force, they are no longer a best endeavor request to procurers, they are actually an instruction to procurers. And so the issue then arises, how do procurers know that the goods that they have been supplied by some supplier actually do conform with the local content requirements as set out in the practice notes of Treasury. And that's where the work of the Bureau of Standards comes in, because they developed a South African technical specification with the number SATS 1286 for determining local content. And SABS was appointed in 2012 as the local content verification agency, and the local content verification office was launched on the 5th of June 2013. So what happens is that it is a way in which procurers, because it is no longer an option, as I said, procurers, people that are entering into tenders, and these tenders require that there's X percent local content. How do they know that a particular tender has got that? Well, one way is that they conform with SATS 1286 and that they get a verification certificate from SABS to say that they conform with SATS 1286. Likewise, the procurer, the people themselves that are offering the product, they know that they are in conformity themselves and that they are then in the position to be able with confidence to bid for the supply of a particular product concern. So let me say that I think that we have seen some important successes in the localization program, in the designation process, not least in the area that we're talking about today. As late as 2010, when the Soccer World Cup was hosted in South Africa, all the buses that were procured for that were fully imported. All the bus bodies were manufactured outside of South Africa. Since 2011, one of the designations has been on bus bodies. And we are seeing that buses that have been procured for the Rea Vaya, the My City, the bus rapid transit programs of a number of municipalities are now being, the bodies are being manufactured in South Africa. And the first certificate is going to be awarded to a company that is supplying bus bodies so that municipalities can be aware of this. While I say we've had successes, including in this area, we're also becoming aware of the need for us to step up our monitoring of this process, because we have come across cases where companies that may be domiciled in South Africa and manufacturing a particular product in South Africa are using that to say that another product which they are supplying is South African and it meets the local content requirements. We've come across cases like that. That's not the case. That's not the, that isn't how it works. And that we need to tighten up on that form of slippage. We've also found slippage in some procurers. They don't know the system. They don't know what's required of them. And I think that one of the steps that we are moving towards is that, as I said earlier, this is no longer a request. This is no longer something we're asking people to do. It is now a legal requirement. And the Auditor General's office is working towards finding that where somebody is not following local content procurement requirements under the designations, that will be non-compliance with applicable legislation, and that will be the basis of an audit finding. So that's one of the things that we are doing. But the way that procurement officers or entities that are responsible for procurement can insulate themselves from that is to ensure that they go to people who have local content verification certificates like the one which we're handing out here. So this is what we are trying to do. As I think the process to date, in addition to the bus manufacturing, which is for the certificates that we're going to be handing out today, there's also solar water manufacturing, the verification work has been done on that. Equipment suppliers on behalf of the National Lotteries Board, and then telecommunications cables for Telkom. But increasingly and progressively, I think we would see this local content verification exercise moving out into other areas. Of course, members of the committee are aware that research for designation of a number of products is an advanced stage in addition to the existing list. It includes transformers, building and construction materials, and rail signalling equipment and components. So I think the presentation will be given by the CEO of SABS. Those are just a few introductory remarks. And I suppose the last word I want to make is to say that we are determined as the government to ensure that when we make a local content designation, that is followed through and that we get the local manufacturing benefits from the local content. Last thing I want to say is just to respond to what you said about going to Kucha. If you are going to that part of the world, you could do a lot worse than visit the facility I visited yesterday, which is not in Kucha, Aspen Pharmacare. There's a company that is 18 years in existence. In other words, its whole life has been during democratic South Africa. It has turned itself into a major multinational. It supplies 1 in 4 of the drugs and tablets that are consumed in South Africa, and is making very significant investments and is very bullish about the manufacturing opportunities in this country. So I invite you to consider that as part of your program as well. But let me stop there and invite you to invite Dr. Mehlo Mukulu to make the presentation.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable Chair, honorable members, good morning. I'll be making a presentation with Mr. Desmond Govinden, who is the head of the Local Content Verification Office at SABS. He will deal with the report back to the committee on the local content verification work we've been doing. With us, a number of SABS people, I'll just ask them to raise their hands as I call their names. Craig Wilson, who is the head of our Cape Town office, with John Fredericks, who's the operations manager at the Cape Town office, and Masechwa Madondo, who is the manager in the local office, local content verification office. Our visitors that we've brought with us, Honorable Chair, leadership of the city, Johannesburg City, Brandon Peterson and Andrew van Nieuwkerk, if they can raise their hands for the honorable members to see, and the two companies that we will be announcing, Mr. Tendai and Mr. Deck Ansoh and Mark Crofton. I won't mention the company's names until the minister gets to the handing out of the certificate. This session for us, Honorable Chair, and I know you requested the report back, but we then, you know, requested that we hand out these certificates at this session because we want to acknowledge government departments and different levels of government that have and government entities that have taken the initiative to drive local content. These are the entities and government departments that have paid for the verification themselves. And the specification says it's the winning tender, the company that should pay, but these government departments have gone beyond that and they've chosen to pay for the verification because they believe in the verification. The City of Johannesburg, what we're going to be handing out today was paid for by the City of Johannesburg. The minister referred to the solar water heating systems. That whole verification process was paid for by the Department of Energy. They took the initiative. The minister also referred to the lotteries board. It's the lotteries board that paid for the verification. So these are the entities that are taking this policy imperative to heart. And I really just want to acknowledge them and really thank them for representing South Africa. Well, my presentation and my part of the presentation is going to just give a context of why SABS is doing the local content verification and why it's important for this country. So I've titled this part of the presentation as our economy, our jobs, and our quality of life. Because we can't talk about products and not talk about standards and not talk about the quality of life of South Africans that we want to see. And I will skip over the pages that introduce SABS because I'm considering the time and move to the page that introduces the local content verification office that we established after the minister appointed SABS as a verification agency. And we've done a lot of work since that time. We launched in June 2013, and we've done some verification processes, and Desmond is going to go through those. But Honourable Chair and members, I wanted to talk about public procurement and the role of standards and the work that we do in public procurement broadly before I hand over to Desmond. We do believe that it's the procurement of low quality goods that hampers most of the service delivery. When we procure a system for a household and that system doesn't work, the people in that house are going to be unhappy, and the next day are going to go out on the street and they're going to go and say the government is not delivering. But the important issue is that the government has delivered, but the system that was delivered was not of the right quality, and there wasn't a process to verify the quality of the system and the process that led to that system being on somebody's house. And I've just chosen Solar Water Geysers because you've seen this a lot on Carte Blanche and various programs that have been analyzing these programs. Next, please. You've probably seen these pictures on TV when a solar water heater has been put on somebody's roof and it's leaking. And we're talking about hot water here. It's hot water under pressure, and anything could happen here. This could burst. But there are children playing. And this is a community. This is somebody's house, and there's hot water that's leaking out of that roof. So it's important that SABS quality assurance is used when we procure as government for implementation of programs. So those systems had not been quality assured. The installation had not been quality assured, and it's the families and the communities that we say we want to save that then end up having to pay the price. And sometimes the price is so devastating that some people die out of getting the service that's not correct for them. Next, please. And that particular house, the house is owned by a lady who's used her savings over the years to put in the best bathroom tiles, and we come with our system. We want to give you hot water. We're giving service delivery, and in our work that is not quality assured, we then destroy value, and this person has no comeback and there's no recourse, and they're sitting with the pipes that are open, their tiles are destroyed, and we have to make sure that we put the right quality assurance when we engage with the service delivery. Next, please. Where we see most of this and where it has devastating effects, and the houses have fallen on people, and our government has had to spend twice on building these houses. They are built outside of standards, and sometimes that then has devastating effects for the people that live in these houses. And if the house falls on a child, that's the impact that when we were giving the people the houses, we did not envisage would happen. Now, there are smaller issues, but they have big impact on the economy, and the issue of roads and the type of tar that is used. Everybody complains about potholes. It's become a topic on 702 when people talk about potholes. Some companies have offered to close potholes, but potholes have everything to do with quality assurance. The material and the workmanship can be improved by putting in place a proper quality assurance. The impact of lack of quality assurance in the building of the infrastructure means that the cars that use that road will have to have their tires repaired at twice or three times the rate that they would have been if the right quality assurance was put in place for the road construction. Next, please. I think what's disturbing for most of us in the technical environment that get to see these behaviors is that even the easiest to be manufactured items are now imported. And road signs, for example, the country will always need road signs. And the road sign, by looking at it, you can't say whether it's good quality or not. The standard will say it has to last for 10 years. And you can't ascertain the lifetime of a road sign by just looking at it. You have to subject it to aging tests in the laboratory to ensure that it's the right one. But we procure road signs, and they're cheaper from another geography, and we then put them on our roads. Within a year, that road sign, the reflection sheeting will go, and that road sign will not work. It will be the same procurer, which could be a municipality, which could be Sanval, that will have to go back and procure a new road sign. So the country is going to pay 3, 4, 5 times for the road sign that they should have paid for once in 10 years. And what we then apply is a triple PFA, which is on price, then works against us because you've gotten a cheaper product, but because you did not insist on the right quality of assurance, you've paid more for the same product. You're paying 10 times for the same product if you have to replace it every year. But the reality is that those products are available in South Africa, and we should be insisting on standardization, but also making sure that when the products are available in South Africa, we insist on localization. For some of the products, especially the electrical products, the impact is dire. The products are not safe, and they are procured through the right processes, but they're not safe. They're cheaper, but they are not safe. It's also an unfair competition because the local companies will have an SABS mark, and they will go through proper quality assurance and price their goods accordingly. But if we're going to use a 90-10 and an 80-20 principle without insisting on quality assurance, we are being unfair to the local companies. This has resulted in the loss of jobs in the economy. And we can have actuaries doing the assessment of how many products have been replaced by low quality products that have come from other geographies in the world, and what that has cost the economy, and then cost the quality assurance that will be needed in order for the country to protect itself. And you will find, as this local content, that it's sometimes less than 1% of what you're procuring, yet there is resistance to do quality assurance and local content verification. So there have been other mechanisms that have been put in place to try and deal with this, but we do think that as SABS, we have to do proper public awareness and help the procuring officials to understand the impact on the economy of the behaviors. Other products that are not tested, that you've seen this before, paraffin stoves that are in the economy, and the materials that are used by people to build houses that then expose them to all sorts of externalities and the winter fires that we see. What's difficult to engage with, and I say that with a lot of reservations, is that you find products that are labeled as made in South Africa, but when we do the local content verification, the technical verification that we do as SABS, you find that 90% of that product comes from elsewhere. What's in South Africa is just an assembled plant, but the plant is assembling products that come from elsewhere. And the self-declaration that the company will do to tender, it will say 100%, because they put in a warehouse in South Africa, and in the warehouse they just assemble these. Verification is important because we then go to the different levels of that product. We will tell you who the first-tier suppliers are, second-tier suppliers are, and aggregate all of them and tell you what the local content composition of that product is. Without that technical evaluation, you will not be able to see or verify that a company has met the 100%. So you find a lot of the companies that stamp their products as made in South Africa, but they are made in, a, in another country. The cap specifies the country, but outward. Next, please. The second level of this localization, and this is, you know, me now going into the policy space, is intellectual property. There are products that South Africa will buy for as long as the country exists. But when we engage with the suppliers of those products, and I'll make an example, we have a nuclear plant as a country, and if we knew that we were going to have other 10 nuclear plants, the kind of procurement that we should have an intellectual property agreement and technology transfer. And that will allow the country to have maybe the first plant being built by the foreign supplier, the second plant is built 10% by South Africans, and the third one is built 30% by South Africans, and progressively you decrease the contribution of the foreign supplier into the program. And there are many areas where we have that, and we know we have that, but we are not insisting of on technology transfer. So that the next iteration of the localization, I would like to see intellectual property and technology transfer embedded into that. And as you can you can see that the indices for knowledge generation are working against South Africa, even though we're investing in R&D. And there are many reasons for that. Next, please. We tend to procure using 10 key solutions, and we don't procure using that ladder of knowledge generation, and we should start doing that in areas where we know we have a long-term relationship with the companies. Next, please. So what really happens in the state and state entities and even the private sector is that we invest in R&D through the Department of Science and Technology and through many programs of government, even the private sector, we invest in R&D. But that R&D goes nowhere. Because when we procure, the tenders specify products that are coming from abroad. We either don't have the capacity or we just specify products using international standards and we're not focusing on building our local capabilities. And until we deal with the culture of not loving self and believing in self and the skills associated with procuring for the outcome of creating jobs, as a country, we will continue with that disjointed mechanism, which invests in R&D, but that R&D does not help us to develop new products and services. When we procure in big tenders, we should have technology transfer so that we can close that gap that you see there. Next, please. It's all of those instruments and the cohesion. The minister spoke about the mechanisms to make sure that the monitoring happens and that there are consequences for companies that don't, or state entities and government departments that don't adhere to this policy imperative. Until that's done, I do think that, you know, we are taking away the future jobs for the next generation. I will now hand over to Desmond to give the specific report on the local content work that we've been doing.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning to Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, and Honourable Members. As the CEO said, we're going to take you through the implementation of local content verification activities within SABS. I'm not going to spend too much of time with that. I think the Honourable Minister has alluded to the Industrial Policy Action Plan and the industrialization and local content localization. And the power that the minister has with regards to designation of specific products, and the DTI has set up the machinery to ensure implementation of this designation, and one of the activities is conducting local content verification within SABS. As the minister has also said, we finalized SATS 1286 in 2011, the technical specification, and to take you through our appointment, I'm going to go very quickly into the activities that we actually performed, which is the SABS has so far undertaken 2,200 hours of verification activities that we're covering various ranges of companies involving various, actually two teams. One is a technical team and the other is the financial auditors at the factories, at the ground level of manufacturing within various provinces in South Africa. Skip those lines. This is basically the calculation, which is the designation. The progress to the standard, we would like to take the South African technical specification into a South African national standard, and we are in the process of actually developing that within our technical committees. Just very quickly through the process, the procuring organ of the state submits documentation to the winning bidder to the DTI. Thereafter, we receive the information to start the verification process where we scope the activity in the sense of the bill of materials of the product. So effectively, we need to understand the organization that's procuring within the organization that's manufacturing the bill of materials, right down to the component level, effectively understanding how, as to how long we actually would conduct verification. Once we do this, we issue a verification certificate, which you will see today, and we maintain a database of organizations that have actually complied with the visit, with the relevant thresholds, which will be maintained within SABS for information to other state-owned organizations. Just to spend a little bit, a few moments on this, relating to the two parts. One part of the verification is on transactional documents to ensure that local content is as per the designated sector. Here, the auditors, the financial auditors, look at the bill of materials. Not only that, but also the invoices, the quotations that we receive for the parts that are actually brought into the organization for fabrication or manufacture. And they would also look at this documentation at the suppliers at various levels in the supply chain. Within this, the technical auditors also verify that is this machine or is this tool on the shop floor to effectively understand that local content is being achieved at this level. As mentioned, we go down to the third layer, the level of the supply chain. Just to take you through the example very quickly, the City of Johannesburg tender via the rear via bus rapid transit system was awarded to an organization called Sandown Motors. The designation of bus bodies requires that an 80% threshold be met, and we conducted the verification at the bus body manufacturer was Marco Polo, and also the supplier of the engine and chassis were Sandown Motors via Mercedes-Benz. Just to give you the intensity of the audit activities, not to spend too much of time, but this is the levels of tier that we go through. On the left, you see the organizations that we actually went and verified the activities of manufacture, and then the products that the organizations produce, and where they were located. So our activity goes through more than one province, and looking at, and on the far right is the level of tier. Some of the other activities performed, as mentioned by our CEO, solar water heaters via Department of Energy. 20 organizations, we actually verified 59 solar water heater systems in that process, and we've completed this activity. We've also done, as the Minister mentioned, via the communication telecom, communication cables, and the bus bodies, including activities at National Lotteries Board. Some of the lessons learned, the SABS has found that a considerable degree of value was infused during the initial process of clarification to procuring entities and industry by the SABS on what types of components and parts make up the elements for the minimum threshold in designation. Where a company is locally based and incorrectly believes that just on that basis that there is 100% compliance to local content thresholds. So having a local organization or in South Africa, they assume that it's 100%, but effectively there need to be manufacturing activities happening. There's also a misrepresentation where the company has some related equipment, but not for the manufacture of the part that we've actually produced or what they said to be produced. Related to baselines, Office of State needs to evaluate the transformation over time in terms of the depth to which they are replacing imported content with local manufacturing. The SABS has therefore defined the steps for local content transformation within the organs of state. With this involved is a baseline assessment on actually where the SOC is in terms of local content within their spin. We've engaged with various organizations with regards to how they would achieve and support the 75% local content in state procurement. In effect of this, effectively the SABS is engaged with the levels of department to undergo this baseline verification of local content. SABS has contacted national, provincial and local governments, including state-owned companies and respective government agencies in 2013. A total of 28 contact persons were identified. SABS has engaged with these responses, although no local content baseline verifications have been conducted to date. The state-owned companies present the strongest opportunity for impacting localization. Although no verifications have stemmed from these activities, with the except of Telkom with regards to the cables, PRASA, ESCOM, and Transnet, we've engaged on numerous levels but have not conducted any local content verification to date. The actions are needed for the verification of state-owned companies' localization within their supply chain. Within the textiles and footwear in 2013-2014, 176 tenders have been awarded to sectors of the tender with ranges from value of 21,000 to 72 million. These contracts are mainly transversal contracts managed by National Treasury. We have not conducted any verification in this area. The major issues of the winning bidders are around who pays and how much and what are the verification costs. Some of these tender values were very low. The SABS has engaged with both the DTI and also National Treasury to address these challenges on the way forward. Thank you. That ends my presentation. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. So this is really the snapshot of what we've been doing, and I wanted to Desmond to show the table that we skipped so that you get the picture of the designated areas and where we've been allowed to do the audit, because we cannot go into the company or a government department and demand to do an audit. It's the government department that is supposed to want to do the audit and engage with the DTI and ourselves. As you can see, these are the designations that are already in place. And you would know that government departments at all levels and state entities procure every day, but these are the only verifications that have been done. And they don't even represent 0.5% of the expenditure in government in this year. So there is quite a big challenge with these procuring officers taking the policy instrument seriously and really implementing it and engaging with it. We ask for meetings, and sometimes we're not given the meetings. When meetings are taken, no action follows. So I welcome that the minister says there's going to be more enforcement in this area. But that's the picture of the adoption and the work that's been done.
Thank you very much. That's taken us over a very exciting rather than a dull technological process. Thank you very much. Members, it's unless you want to say anything, Minister, we'd like to engage on the matter. Yes, thank you. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Liyenge.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I must say I'm a big fan of local content and localisation, and I think that there's certainly a great place for it in driving the economy. However, there's a couple of things that need to be looked at. And, I mean, obviously government has one of the biggest purchasing power rights in the country, and so therefore there's a big onus on government getting local content or localization correct. And that is going to rely squarely on government departments and entities. And I'm very glad to hear the Minister's remarks about an audit finding on departments that don't follow through with procurement. And I would just like to understand from the Minister if there's also engagements with the AG's office in bringing the Auditor General on board for further auditing of government departments in that respect. And also, when it comes to private companies, I mean, I think that the way that this thing needs to work is certainly through incentives. There needs to be a point scoring system for private companies so that they work up to achieving the status of certification as opposed to running away from it or trying to avoid it. So we need to look at some form there. But also, I think that there needs to be a joint scorecard between government and business. I think there needs to be an open scorecard that we can see how are both sectors doing. And also, you know, what are the penalties for I don't want to say non-compliance, but maybe the word is miscompliance or fraudulently trying to attain certification. And I want to give you one of the most terrible examples I've come across this year is certainly from government's side not meeting this, is that there was a tender issued in through the Tshwane municipality for the procurement of plastic wheelie bins, you know, the ones that we put our rubbish in. And they are made in South Africa. They are made to SABS standards, and yet the contract was given to a third party who imported them from China, who, when you look at the picture, they're not even the right color. They're supposed to be green, and they came in and they were blue. They were the wrong size. Yet the SABS somehow certified them as in compliance. Now, I've got the documents, and I'd love to give them to you, because there's clearly a problem there. But we've got to have a situation where everyone's playing fairly to this, if it's going to work. But certainly I think that there's a great opportunity for this, and if we can get it right, we can certainly support local industry. Thank you.
Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Thank you very much. Look, I want to say at the start of my comments, I'm a huge fan of buying South Africa and buying local content. I think it has enormous potential to assist manufacturing and create jobs. That said, we also have to make sure that we're not wasteful with public money. And so when we buy local, we must make sure that also South African businesses come up to the standard of global competitiveness. And so, you know, it's acceptable in the short run for local content. I think it's acceptable in the short run for local content to be more expensive than imported content. But there must be a plan, a demonstrable plan, to make sure that local content is competitive, especially when we're using public money. And I wanted to, this question is either to the Minister or to the SABS, whoever's, or to anyone from the department who's most appropriate to answer. How we ensure that while we absolutely give our full backing to local content and via South Africa, that we are not wasteful with public money. That's the first question. The second question then is around the process of designation, and this one I think is definitely to the Minister and the Department. What is the process followed in designation, and why is it that we can't designate more goods faster? And I want to ask you specifically about government garage, and why is it that government garage does not exclusively procure motor vehicles assembled in South Africa. It seems to me that that's a relatively easy government garage. Across all three spheres of government must procure thousands of vehicles every year. Why is it that we haven't designated that yet? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Hill-Lewis. Honourable Mkhongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation from SABS about the issues of local content, but I'm very much very, very, very concerned. If the entities of the state do not implement a policy of the state, what could be the challenge? because I'm worried that we want to develop the local content and the buying locally, but the very same state is not implementing that policy. There is a problem there. There is a problem with those people who are procuring. What do they stand to benefit from imported goods? And I thought also the auditing process should engage that particular thing. What do they stand to benefit from imported goods? And you might find serious wonders why they are reacting, they are not responding on implementing that policy. I think it's very important. Two, do we see the question of fronting in relation to verification as a fundamental question? Is it rife at this point in time? Because we have many instruments that we have put in place to fight fronting, where people now, they came with a very much complex issue of fronting. Do we find that issue as also a challenge? Because for me, it's the very same thing that, I mean, the government can do, because there is a policy position that has been articulated by the president, 75% local. We are failing that process if the state does not do that, because it's going to be very difficult for the state to monitor other private institutions in South Africa and encourage them, because they are not. And the state is always told that you are not implementing your own policy and you expect us as private sector to implement such a policy. So I'm very worried about that. What is the challenge on the question of the technology transfer and local capabilities? What is the challenge? I don't know, you know, since 1994 we've been complaining about the lack of local capabilities, and we're taking number of students from 1994 until today to universities. What are they doing there? Are they not passing at university? Well, what is the challenge? We've been skilling people here in South Africa since 1999. Where are these people? And we've been talking about the lack of skills for the next coming 100 years. Where are these people? Where are they? And up until South Africa recognizes its own people that you have trained and deployed them, you know, correctly, we're going to have a problem of the question of the skills. Where are the skills people? So I think we need to do that audit. I'm not sure that that is a responsibility of the Department of Labor at the moment, about the audit of our own skills, because the last audit that I knew, it was in the Third Parliament. There was a skills audit in South Africa. You know, where are the skills? So I have those few questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mkongi. Honorable Liyenge.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for coming late. I had to start another portfolio committee meeting. But safe to indicate, Chairperson, that what the Honorable Mkongi has said with regard to the retention of the expertise that we produce at a government level, it's an aspect that the Department of Trade and Industry must actually look into. Because as we pursue the initiative by the ANC government to ensure that the local content is actually used in all corners of the country, but that does not seek to undermine the professionalism and quality that is needed. So the problem would be to produce quality. So if the collaboration between the department and the tertiary institution is not attached to a notion that says, after attaining these skills from this institution, you have an obligation as a beneficiary to remain in the country and utilize that particular skill in the country in order that we actually reap what we sow. I really appreciate the ground that has been covered by the department to ensure that this 75% local content, as pronounced by the president, is going to be a reality. There has been many endeavors on the part of government to ensure that it does happen, that the local content is being prioritized, but the question of quality has been a problem, and also corrupt practices, the fronting part of it, is also something that needs to be looked into by the department, and all your endeavors, the minister and the department, are actually indicating that there's somewhere where we're going. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Liyenge. Honorable Mantash.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would follow suit and welcome the report. But I am glad that the minister is open about the processes that he has undertaken. It is going to be very difficult, Minister, to reach a point where you want to go. We understand that there has been people who have been benefiting from being the only people who are skilled in the country, who are currently portraying themselves as having a buy-in in this what we're trying to do. All we want to say is that we must employ people with the skill to do the verification that SABS is doing. Let's give them more people to do it. Because I have an experience in one municipality, Chair, where a 65-year-old man, white man, who has supposed to have been retired 5 years ago, is kept inside that municipality. Not that he's staying in the municipality, he's staying here in Cape Town. So the young people that we skill on a daily basis are held outside the organization, but we pay a 45,000 retainer fee for that man. So it's going to be a very difficult road that we're going to go through. Then I would ask the minister to ensure that he enriches SABS with human resource for the practicality of the implementation of what he's trying to do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantash. Certainly one wants to add one's appreciation along with other members of the committee, but there is something that has been of concern to me. While I realise the public procurement was only pronounced recently, if you like, in SONO, the 75%, we appreciate that, and that the localisation hadn't kicked in, if you like, as a policy for 20 years and has been a more recent policy. Nevertheless, it is disturbing on the tender issue to find that municipalities, businesses and the like procure tenders. They are locally based and they procure the tenders having created the perception that meters, if you like, solar, water, panel heaters, etc., will be purchased within the country. And yet you find once they get the tender, they're procured outside of the country, notwithstanding such products are made in the country itself. And I don't know if this means with the solar panels and the globes that are currently used in one's house, the tubes, if they're also verified, because there have been some nasty accidents in the country. Are those, does that have a SABS mark? And do buildings get passed with that having been checked? Because I think these are the kinds of things we do need to guard against, because one does appreciate that you are focused on the protection of people's lives and their safety, and that's why we're having this. So really, one, if there is a loophole in the law somewhere that is allowing the abuse of tenders, then we want to know where there is this loophole so we can plug it. Yes, Honourable Kroonhoff.
Madam Chair, just a point of order. We do not hear the bells in this chamber. So, the, you know, so if there's going to be bells, we must ask maybe someone to sit outside just to tell us when the bells are.
Next time, please don't take a point of order. I got the impression, though, it was just because you were new in the committee. I don't allow points of order in this committee. This is not the House. This is a committee. But just a minute. No, you can put your hand up. I'll take it as an exigency. We were given this chamber because the Honourable Froelich was under the impression that we would hear the bells in here. That's why this was specifically chosen. We were scheduled to be in the old assembly, as you know. I think your Honourable Hilder said, I think that may be a very good idea. And I was going to add that my own secretary would have been here to keep an eye on things. Most unfortunately, she was in a taxi that was in an accident on Monday, and although not critically ill, you know, Miss Makanda is obviously still shook up and taking the medication and also recovering her legs, I think, from the injuries, etc. So, you know, we certainly, I'm sure the committee would agree with me, we wish her well. Can you hear now, Honourable Hill Lewis, all right? Can you hear those bells? Do you think, with the door open? Okay. And may I ask you, Mr. Woodington, to please go down to the bottom. You see those double little seats, the little bunky there? You go and sit there, please. Thank you. Sorry about that, Minister. Thank you.
Okay, well, I think quite a number of the questions were directed at me, but I'll also let, for example, Grant and the CEO of SAMHSA come in on some of them. I think I wanted to start off by saying, well, of course, everybody is a supporter of localization. I think that's welcome. That's an important message that we can be sending from this parliament. But I think that what I want to say is that when it comes to the designation, it's just one tool of localization that we are trying to support. I'll come to all of the others in a second. But that when we do the designations, there is quite a lot of technical work that goes into determining the percentage local content. And we don't set it at some kind of unrealistic level that can't be met and is going to require a huge escalation in the price. It's based on what we think, and with a lot of consultation with industry, and procurers, what we think can be met as a target and exactly intended to substitute realistic and not hugely cost overrunning local production for imports. That's what it's about. It's about that. And I think that what I've detected is that we've actually got a bit of a... we pitched these things, I think, actually right, because I get local, I get foreign investors, and foreign investors who come and manufacture here are counted. So it's not whether you owned or not, it's whether you domiciled here or not, it's what counts. I get them come in and saying they can beat our local content, and I think that's the kind of virtuous circle that we want to get in place so that procurers can not just meet the minimum, but actually can use localization as one of the tools of deciding this one's better than that one. I think that's where we want to get at. I think what we're trying to do is also to put in place, and this is also the work of the procurement officer in National Treasury, mechanisms in place where we do not allow people to simply game the system and to hugely inflate the price just because we've got a localization designation in place. We try to put in place a number of disciplines around that. I think the truth of the matter is what the CEO is telling us. We are actually paying a premium for imported goods in many cases. That's what we're doing right now. All sorts of people are becoming agents and positioning themselves as agents. And some of them are abusing the BE system. And the example, I think, that's the best known was contained in the report of the current deputy president when he had a commission on BEE. And he talked about how some municipality in the name of BEE had awarded a contract to somebody who was importing cables and it cost 1,000 jobs in Aberdeen Cables. And the answer that he was seeking was, is this enhancing or subtracting from BE? And obviously it's subtracting. So I think that's the point. Now, I do think it's important to just say a few things about where does the 75% come from and some of the tools that we have for localization. First of all, where does this come from? We were involved in the negotiation of a social accord on localization with business, labor, community, and government. And it was actually coming from the social partners who all agreed that that target of 75% was something we should all aspire to. So it wasn't something that's sucked out of our thumbs or simply shoved in the manifesto without thinking. It comes from that engagement with the social partners in the localization. Why did we have to have that? Where does government come in? There are two provisions in the World Trade Organization which are relevant. The one is the optional protocol on transparency in government procurement. We have not signed that, and we will not sign that. If we signed that, we would have to say that any member of the WTO, without any discrimination, can compete for any government tender. Those that have signed that are saying that. They open their procurement systems, and they actually decommission the tool of localization by government. It's not a requirement in the WTO, but we have not signed it, and therefore we're perfectly entitled, in terms of public procurement decisions, for us to insert localization requirements, which is exactly what we've done, and we will continue to do so. What we cannot do, though, is under something called the trade-related investment measures, we can't impose the same on the private sector. We can't turn around to Walmart and say 55% of your products must be from South Africa, or the mining companies, when you buy mining equipment, you can't buy the one from outside, you have to buy the one from inside. We can't do that. So that's why we had to go for a localization accord. Now, I think the truth of the matter is that government and the public sector has gone a lot further with localization, despite all the commitments that have been made, but they're best endeavor type commitments by the private sector. That's the truth. And I think that what we should actually be doing is to continually ask the private sector to match. One of the examples that was given, one of the localization things you'll see down there, is oral solid dosages, which the public sector has said we will purchase various pharmaceutical products from local sources. That's part of the designation. But in the discussion, the private sector said we could do the same. And then we have a huge scale. We haven't seen that yet, and I think that's part of the story. So let's come to the public sector. What do we have? We have the instruments in place. Well, I think at the top of a pyramid would be what the CEO is talking about, fleet procurement. We haven't got any examples in place. But we would bundle all our contracts into contracts over a very lengthy period of time. And we would say that there's a progressive increase in the percentage of localization at each phase. So if we start off in phase one with a very low level, we move progressively up. That would be the way. The second one is we've got something called a competitive supply development program. That applies to Eskom and Transnet. And essentially they got exemption from the National Industrial Participation Program to have those programs. They're supposed on their own within the framework of the CSTP to develop their own local supplies. That covers those two. And then any other, it's been in force for ages, any other procurement of $10 million or more, you have to have an offset. I think you know from the discussions we've had in this committee in the past that in terms of the NIPP, we've actually been changing it. We're not going to allow multipliers anymore, and we're also going to insist, by and large, with very few exceptions, that the offsets will be in the sector where the procurement takes place. If we buy aircraft, then there will have to be investment in some or other development of the aircraft manufacturing sector in South Africa. That's the sort of thing which is called direct LIP. We're favoring direct LIP. And then the other tool that was introduced is designations. Now, I think I've been making the point repeatedly, and which is why we are, and indeed I can say we are engaging the Auditor General's office, that we're saying this is no longer an option. It's not for a municipality to decide, well, we don't want to do this, we would prefer to do it. And by the way, we haven't done wheelie bins, so wheelie bins are not covered by designations. But where the designations are in place, it's no longer an option, it's a requirement. And it's a requirement which we insist has got to be implemented. Now, when we look at the state of implementation, I think we see some successes. And we do see successes, but we also see challenges. Those challenges arise from, first of all, there could be willful non-compliance. That for one reason or other, some procurement officer decides that he prefers the import, and maybe there are all kinds of corruption issues involved in that. There could well be. They don't understand the system. That's part of the story. We go out in an exercise to explain to people the system. Or it's not clear because the companies that are procuring are saying, we're South Africa based, we've got a factory in place X. But as the CEO said, or the team said, well, the factory makes something else and they don't make the thing concerned in South Africa. That doesn't mean they meet the localization requirements. Or they've got a warehouse and they do some very small part of it and they claim it and they don't conform. It can be that. They may be misled by the private sector procurer. Now if they do that, the private sector supplier does that, it's a form of fraud. But I think you know from the discussion over the BEE legislation that the common law offence of fraud is very difficult to prosecute. And I think we're going to have to come and look at that in due course if that becomes a big enough issue. Where fronting can come in is that we can have people coming in and supporting imports in the name of BEE. And I think we're saying very clearly that this is a requirement to whoever it is involved. You don't get let off the localization because you are claiming BEE points. We don't get let off the localization. And then the other thing that can happen is that it's just kind of difficult to recognize. I mean, you've got a bus body here. Does it conform or doesn't it conform? That's where the technical work comes in. The SABS comes in, and they actually do the measurement. And they've set the standard, they do the measurement. So they can come in and they can say that this company does actually conform. And the other one that they said is that you produce a sample which is local, and then all the other products are not. So any of these things that happen are things that the technical verification is in place. Now, they made a strong case an important part of how South Africa has got to position itself. We've got to be a supplier of quality goods, and we have legislation in place. There's been a separation, as I'm sure you all know, between the Bureau of Standards and the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications. The National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications says that the following may not be, the following is the minimum standards. Very technical stuff. You know, this or that, the thickness of electricity wiring. The paraffin stoves, the sort that fall over and cause fires, are actually illegal in this country. The technical standard is if the paraffin stove falls over, it's supposed to go out. And the flame doesn't carry on burning and it doesn't spill all the paraffin and burn down everything. And we have, with the NRCS, we're constantly stepping up the game with them to combat these things. They've done a lot of work at ports and they intercept and every now and again I go to these things called destruction events and they get this stuff which is non-compliant. It's all kinds of stuff. It's cement, which you put it in the wall if you actually use the cement. The building would fall down. These paraffin stoves are always intercepted. It is kind of electrical equipment. Last year I went Christmas time, lots of Christmas decorations. You plug it into your tree and you're going to have a fire soon. It's that kind of stuff. There's plenty of this around, and some of it does find its way into the construction sector. There are minimum standards, and we are working to secure higher enforcement. I've been saying to private sector players, you're the ones who know who's out-competing you, because not only is it unsafe, but you're also having an unfair competitive advantage over people that are compliant. You know who's out-competing you, who's doing shoddy tires, things like that. You must know who the suppliers are. Tell us, and we'll get the NRCs to go and act against them. But that's the kind of mentality that I think we need to develop much, much more. We haven't got it adequately and strongly enough. And the other one is that these paraffin stoves are in violation of two pieces of legislation. One is the standards, and the other one is the Consumer Act, National Consumer Act. You supply somebody with goods that are harmful, that is an offence under that. I want these two agencies to work together and wipe out the scourge of this. Everybody, if you go to somebody in a township and say, don't buy the stove because it's harmful, they're not going to listen because it actually costs a lot less. But if you say anybody who supplies the stove is going to be in violation of those two statutes and we're going to go for you and we're going to hit you with the full force of the law, that will be a deterrent. So I think that's the kind of way we want to work around that. And then let me just say that standards and quality assurance is the way we deal with keeping out shoddy goods in this market. But there's also shoddy quality assurance. There's plenty of that. I'm sure the CEO would love to give us a long lecture about that, about this is happening. Because what we have is shoddy quality assurance running around in this country and actually claiming to verify this, that, and the other thing. And quite often it is by, you pay a bit more, you get a higher standard, the sort of thing we saw with the BEE verification certificate. And that's why I think one of our main messages is go to SABS, because SABS has got the quality and the reputation in place. If you go to something else, anybody's game, whether you've got anybody's guess whether things are up to scratch or not. So I think that's a sort of a summary of many of the other things. Sorry, there's one more thing in the procurement. Maybe Garth can just say what it is. I can't remember. It's in the procurement. It does, which we don't think is enough in place. If we do designations, we're doing them. We're trying to follow the infrastructure as well as regular purchases. So the next round of things that we see as the infrastructure program rolls out, there are localization targets that are set in each of the strategic infrastructure programs. But beyond that, there's a provision in the Procurement Act which allows procurers themselves to make decisions in favor of localization. And we don't think that that is used enough. And I think we would want to say, if somebody is importing wheelie bins which are not not fit for purpose and are competing against local manufacturer, we want them, even if we don't designate wheelie bins. I can't imagine that we're going to be designating wheelie bins in the near future, but that they themselves should use that provision to take a decision in favor of locally manufactured wheelie bins. I think that would be a message that we would clearly want to associate ourselves with. So I think that's enough from me. I don't know whether Garth wants to add, and then the CEO perhaps.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The Minister's covered most of the ground. Just to say, it's 9.3 of the amended regulations of the Triple PFA enable any state entity, state-owned company, sphere of government to design the tender with localization requirements. It's an enabling clause. It's not a compulsory clause. The reality is that it's been too little used. And so the critical question, as the Minister has said, is to try and ensure that this enabling clause is used consistently across government. The second thing is Dr. Makube, Madam Chair, is the Chief Director responsible for industrial procurement. He's here. A lot of this work falls under him. We don't, as the Minister has said, precisely amongst other reasons, because we sometimes face court actions, we don't designate something for local procurement without a very, very substantial research process. And in some instances, we haven't advised the Minister to designate a product if, for example, there isn't sufficient state procurement. So we looked, to give you an example, at chemicals used in water possible example, but we follow a very, very rigorous process before designating any product, which raises then the issue raised by the Honourable Hill Lewis, which is that we can't featherbed South African companies. So issues of raising competitiveness are critical as a condition for the range of policy instruments which we deploy in the Industrial Policy Action Plan, one of which is local procurement. So all our sectors are very actively engaged with the companies that are the beneficiaries of industrial policy incentives to ensure that competitiveness is raised. Obviously, the best measure of competitiveness, or perhaps the easiest measure, is whether these companies are able to compete in export markets for the products which are supported in the domestic market. And we are doing a very large piece of work in relation to largely dynamic companies across a range of sectors to examine the extent to which support in the domestic market is being translated into entry into export markets. And there the critical sectors are obviously where we have competitive advantages and where our exports, including into Africa, are being significantly raised. So to give you one example, mining capital and transport equipment is a sector where our exports are climbing quite significantly, and that is on the back of significant support from government. But there's to make the point that the minister has made, sometimes there are unintended consequences of policies. So the mining charter has, for very good reason, strong requirements for black economic empowerment, but it contained very little for localization requirements, which is why we are working with other departments to ensure that multiple policy objectives are pursued across other departments to support local companies, and the mining charter would be one example. And another would be the fact that the renewable energy independent power producers had local content requirements, which in the first two rounds were 30% and then 45%. Having sent those market signals, we've had something like 8 billion rand investment into manufacture of components in wind and solar energy, and if we raise the local content requirements even further in the next round of the REIT, then we can secure more investment and rise up the value chain so that we're not just localizing the parking lot and the concrete stanchions which hold the wind towers, but we begin to produce higher manufactured value-added products in the value chain as a whole in renewable energy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strachan. And is there anything in addition the SABs themselves would like to add, Doctor?
Thank you, Chair. Just the Minister and the DDG have covered most. The issue I wanted to focus on is the issue of technology transfer, and to say that technology transfer will not happen if there isn't that connectedness between the buyers and the generators of knowledge. And until, as a country, we buy from the innovators in the country, we will train people and they will not be contributing to what we take as a country, because we will not be focusing on them. So there is a need for the procurers to really start to connect with the producers of knowledge and start to buy products that are new from innovators and develop a space to test new solutions that come from the country and have those go through proper quality assurance so that they can compete fairly with the products that are already in the market. Until we connect those dots, I do think that we're going to continue to be talking about technology transfer as a theory in the country. The instruments need to work together to assist us with that. And then the issue of the other issue the minister touched on is the issue of competitiveness. I really, from what I've seen, and SABS sees most of the manufacturers, foreign and local manufacturers, as we do quality test their product, do quality assurance, I can say that the assumption that the local companies will cost more is not necessarily true. It's the foreign companies that will what we find, low quality goods cost the country more. And if we deal with the issue of quality, you know, then you've leveled the playing field and you can then make that assessment. But you can't make the assessment if the others have a different rules and they can supply at a low quality, because that then says their cost is going to be lower because they are not meeting the necessary standard. When we've leveled that playing field, then we can start to monitor whether there are cost implications. And the key issue there is that people are just able to send out the tender and award it without really quoting a standard and ensuring that the company that supplies has met the standard. And Chair, Honourable Chair, said in the past that whoever procures water for Parliament is procuring without ensuring that there's quality assurance. And you know, those are some of the just small examples where we have the power to change and ensure that the right people that do the right things get the tenders in government.
Now, don't worry, we've raised this before. We raised this issue about 4 years ago, and I think it's a good thing to raise it yet again. I'm glad to say last time when we raised this rooibos issue being imported, Parliament did deal with the matter. So perhaps now we can once again publicly make it clear that I have no doubt that this is fine coming out of our taps, but let's get the SABS approval on here. Yes, let's get that one done as a start. Right. Yeah, you're also looking at the yogurt there, Honourable Mkongi. Is that SABS? Now, all right. I don't know which one of you had your hand up first, but I'm going to go to the Honourable Alberts, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologise for being somewhat late. This may have been discussed before I came, so but I'm going to try it anyway. Minister, I would just like to know, in terms of designation, why building materials are also not designated, and also electronic material, and interestingly enough, tolling electronic materials, why that's not designated. You know, we can manufacture that in South Africa. Thank you very much.
That's a good one there. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to also follow up on the point of government vehicles, Chairperson. You know, the police service procures thousands of vehicles. Every department that has an inspectorate, social development, labour, home affairs, agriculture, they all procure lots of vehicles. And many of those vehicles that you see on our roads are all imported vehicles, not locally manufactured vehicles. So I just want to follow up on that question, please.
Good point there, Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of follow-ups. I'm concerned with the designation of 30% on set-top boxes. Now, government's going to be subsidising 70% of the cost for 5 million set-top boxes. That seems a very extraordinary low figure if we have only designated 30% of them. I'd like to know why that is. I'd also like to get some comment from the Minister if there's any discussions being held with the Department of Energy around the agreements that are taking place around nuclear energy in terms of the NIPP, and whether a framework has already been developed with that specific procurement which looks to be taking place in the near future. Minister, you still haven't dealt with the issue of incentives for the private sector and what your thoughts are on there. And also, I found what the DDG said very interesting, that there is an enabling clause, but not something that is more prescriptive in that X and Y must be done. And what your thoughts are about then involving either the AAG or the chief procurement officer to ensure that there is more compliance or encouragement with departments to do so. And then, Minister, I'd like to put it to you that government buys a lot of vehicles for ministers, and whether we can designate the purchase of ministers' vehicles to locally made vehicles, specifically 3 Series and C Classes, which are made in South Africa, and is that something that you'd be prepared to designate? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I do have a question as well. You know, on these gambling machines, the one-armed bandits, among many others, do they also have the SABs? Have they got that SAB stamp on them as well? And what about the ATMs? Things like that, yes. Right, thank you.
Inspector, now, well, building materials is actually one of the ones that is in the next lot of designations. Just to say, the e-tolls, I guess, the point that needs to be made is that the tender and the construction of the gantries and all that predated 2011, so that's not, we're not facing a number of new procurements in that area at this point, but if there are, I'm sure we will be looking at that, which gets to the way which we're looking at the nuclear energy bill. It's in the general policy framework. There are a few cooperation arrangements that have been worked through with the Department of Energy, but there's no procurement, no tender that's been issued. What we are doing already is there's a group of companies that are in the Nuclear Energy Association of South Africa, I think that's what they call themselves, and they're working towards some of them acquiring the international qualifications that are required to work on nuclear build. The nuclear program, I think we're encouraging the highest level of localization. It's not quite the case when I first started discussing this matter. I thought that, as Grant said, the car park and the office block was all that would be available because everything else was in what's called the nuclear island. But there are actually quite a lot of things in the generation that don't require international certifications. All the equipment that is used, the boilers, the generation equipment, none of that needs international certification for nuclear. But I think that we would like also South African companies to be getting involved in this and for some higher level of localization. So what I think you can rest assured is that when and if a decision is taken about a procurement of a nuclear power facilities, we will be, as a department, working to ensure that we get a high level of localization of the inputs involved in that. Then let me say, I think I can come back on the set-top boxes. Well, this is an area where, if we also look at the other television manufacturing, because I think that actually the biggest opportunity from the migration from analog to digital is not in the set-top boxes. It's actually in the manufacture of the television sets, because once the digital signal is switched on, then a number of people will be buying new television sets, new digital television sets, and it's ensuring that that happens. The set-top boxes will be used by people, lower income people, who will need to continue to use analog-based sets and then to get the signal through the set-top box. But in both cases, we don't manufacture and are not likely to be manufacturing in the near future a huge amount of electrical components. The little bells and whatever gizmos that go on the boxes. So what our contribution is to populate circuit boards. That's the level of manufacturing that we get there. I think that's probably why the percentage looks relatively low by value. On the vehicles, I can tell you the vehicle I drive as a start with. It's not either a 3 Series or a C-Class. It's a Toyota Fortuner. And I did buy that one because it was manufactured in South Africa. I took that decision myself when I was appointed in 2009. I think that what we can say is this is something we can look at and consider. Because if we look across the board, there is a high level of this. But I think the message we've sent to the OEMs is, of course, some of the benefits they get are the ability to import fully made-up models of their products that they don't manufacture in South Africa, given that a significant part of the volume that they do manufacture in South Africa goes abroad. It's part of the reposition of themselves away from the large number of models manufactured in the country with very short production lines and very high cost, which was the motor program at the end of apartheid, to integrating into global value chains where one or other model is manufactured in South Africa, not just for the South African market, but for the world market, so that the C-Class, we're one of the few countries, I can't remember how many there are, there's more than one, but there's a small number that manufacture the C-Class, and we are one of the ones. And in fact, the right-hand drive C-Class that's manufactured in South Africa will be on the roads in Japan, the same with the BMW 3 Series. So that's how it works. And then the 5 Series and the other models they import. So I think it would raise those questions if we turn around and said, not just the models that have manufacturing capacity in South Africa, but we actually turn around, not just the OEMs with manufacturing capacity, and we said you could buy theirs, but you'd have to buy only the models that are manufactured in South Africa. That could raise a number of questions and concerns like that. But I do think that part of the general attitude of supporting local, we can consider what you say about that, and I think we can engage some of our colleagues on that. And on the gambling machines and the ATMs, I think I'm going to leave that one to SABS. Oh, incentives. Look, we don't give an incentive particularly to localize. We give an incentive to manufacture in South Africa. That can include localization. So all of the incentives that we provide, 12i, MSEP, the motor program, any of them, would also apply to companies that are actually gearing themselves up to produce for the procurement tenders. It would include that. I think the MSEP is a good example of what Garth is saying. We want to encourage companies that do get involved in work for government tenders to actually make sure that they are raising their competitiveness. And I think just again what the CEO said, even myself, I was surprised when I heard this. I didn't think it was intuitively likely to be the case. But I went to a company called RRL Grindrod, who produced diesel locomotives. And those diesel locomotives, they told me, were the cheapest and most cost-effective diesel locomotives available on the African continent. I didn't think that was the case. I was told that, and that seems to be it. So, South African-made products actually can be highly, highly competitive. So I don't think we should assume that local products are necessarily cost ineffective, and it is our intention not to allow rent seeking. I think if we don't construct this thing appropriately, we could get that. Even competitive companies would be tempted to gain the system. So I think we've got a number of devices in place. We've monitored very carefully the prices of the tenders. So I mean, the Department of Health has been talking about this. I mean, the quite high levels of localization together with maintenance of price discipline, I think that's really what we're trying to achieve. And there are some, I think, quite good examples where that has happened.
Right. Have we dealt with all these questions? Because I saw Dr. Michelle Makulu, there were a couple of others still outstanding. We're going to give you just 5 minutes to close off now, because we've also got certain challenges. Thank you.
Could I just ask one before the CEO starts to
go ahead.
To answer? I'm just looking at your formula here. And the formula only includes, as I understand it, it only includes the actual
content of the product that someone is buying.
It only includes the content of the product that someone is selling, but what about the machinery used to produce that product? Is that captured in the local content by value? And is it possible to include that?
Thanks. Mr.
Governor. Honourable Member, relation to the calculation, yes, it includes all the, in the price, includes all the overhead costs, that includes the machinery, the overheads to manufacture the product that is at the plant. So it includes all of that, and that's how you get to the Y value. Relation to the one-arm bandits from lottery and the ATM machines, no, there's no certification or product certification relating to those products. So therefore, at the moment, it wouldn't have an SABS mark on it.
Honourable Chair, what I wanted to explain is that standards are voluntary. And compulsory specifications are compulsory. And there's a differentiation that, you know, maybe some in the market is not quite well understood, but we try and ensure that the industry manages itself by ensuring that they meet the standards. Because if we're going to use the regulations for every sector, you know, then there's a burden to the industry. But even in areas, because some of these are electrical equipment, so what goes into the equipment itself needs to be SABS approved. And we then monitor those in terms of the cables and the equipment that will put people's lives in danger. We look after them. And then, Chair, we would like to then move to the part of the certification, handing out the certificates, if the Chair would allow.
Just before we do that, because I also want to make sure we move to that. That's very, very exciting. And, Minister, it's good to see that there are a couple of representatives from Johannesburg, Marco Polo. I didn't seem to see one from the Department of Energy, but I could be wrong in the lotteries. But I know that there are as many as you can, and that is very exciting. But just one point that I would like to make, Minister, in this area, it's a debate we've had before about SAB and then the national compulsory, you know, regulations for compulsory specifications, that one. And yes, while we recognize you don't want to put a burden on the manufacturing and private sector, etc., nevertheless, you know, issues such as these gambling machines, not that we want to promote things, but nevertheless, there needs to be some way that people know they are, you know, they do give you what they should be and they're not rigging things. And the same may go for ATMs. Because we have also heard that people don't always get the money they have requested, and it's a long challenge afterwards to prove you haven't received X rather than Y. So it is something we would like to take up further in the future. Thank you, Minister.
Well, the gambling legislation does provide for regulations, and there are regulations about what the machines do, and that's why it's better to go to a legal gambling outlet than an illegal one, because the illegal one, you never know. The odds of winning in either are not very high, but the odds are much worse. if you go to an illegal one. And there are technical specifications around that in under the Gambian legislation. I don't know about the ATMs.
No, thank you, Minister. But, you know, as Dr. Meshlum Makulum says, they don't have the SAB stamp on. So, like we say, you know, when we get to gambling next year, we'll certainly tackle all of that, as well as the ATMs in due course. But yes, we are ready for this very exciting moment. And what we're going to do is, members of the committee, Honourable Elvis, you were not here when I was trying to request members in writing, but we have an unusual situation. We have had it once before where we're going to, as it were, just suspend this part of the process of the committee so that we do allow the presentation of these awards and allow the minister and the chief operating officer to take over here in the front so that those awards can be made, and then also that there is a photograph opportunity. Over to you, Minister. Thank you.
And over to the CEO.
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Honourable Chair, for affording us the opportunity to give this award of local content compliance to the suppliers of the Johannesburg municipality. They ran a tender process for Ria Vaya, and the tender was issued to the by the City of Johannesburg to send down motors, a subsidiary of Mercedes-Benz South Africa, and the two entities are represented. And the engine and the chassis were supplied by Mercedes-Benz, while the bus body was supplied by Mokopolo, which is 80% designated for local content threshold. And SABS successfully completed the verification process at Mokopolo, and this business represents a manufacturer from Brazil, one of the BRICS countries, setting up a factory in South Africa and utilizing parts manufactured by companies located across three of our provinces, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. It is worth noting that Mokopolo has also started localizing some of their luxury lines here, thereby increasing their manufacturing footprint in South Africa. And it is such a success story. We wanted the minister to assist us in handing out these certificates. And I'd like to then, I don't know if this is going to be our podium, invite the minister and the officials from the City of Johannesburg to then join the minister in order for us to hand out the certificates.
Yes, members, I thought it would be a good idea if we just get off of our seats there for a moment.
I would then like I would like to then invite Sandel Montos, a representative, to come and collect their certificate from the minister. And we will have the certificate moved from the official from the City of Johannesburg and being handed to the minister, and the minister then handing it to the winning bidder. Okay, thank you. Whilst we call the representative from Mokopolo to come and collect the certificate, and it's the same process from SABS to the City of Johannesburg to the minister.
Congratulations.
And And finally, I'd like the chair of the portfolio committee to join the minister, join you with the two awardees and the representative from the Johannesburg municipality. So for a photo.
You and I get enough pictures here in Parliament, eh? look, Minister, and also FAB, DTI, and also all of those who were here with us, Marco Polo, Mercedes-Benz, the City of Johannesburg, Department of Energy, if they were here, National Lotteries Board. We are getting on with the rest of our committee. We're going to be adopting some minutes. Thank you very much. I'm just going to ask you, Comrade Montash, just for a minute, go and see someone who's looking at a camera and see what BRR is on, so that we can see where we are in the house. No. We're number 22, you know, on the BRR. BRRR. But consideration of the budget review, that's happening now. Yes. Would you just check quickly where are we? Because you'll be allowed in the house. Would you do that, please? Thank you. Thank you. Doctor Toro. Right. Now, I do, just while we're just waiting for everyone to move on, for those, and this is also, I know you'll be interested, Honourable McPherson, that, just a minute, that, you know, our programme has changed a fair amount in the last 2 weeks, as I'm sure you would agree. And consequently, a lot of how we were planning to do things has suffered as a result. But let me say this. I have been in touch with Ms. MEC Scott. And, you know, she's keen to come on a Friday, although, as you know, when we first scheduled the 21st, that was out of the picture, etc. And that really is because they want to, they want to make sure that it's not like fruitless expenditure, although I'm sure they wouldn't regard any of their engagements with us as fruitless, but that they would make, be able to do a few more things besides just being here for an hour or two. So what they are doing is they are sending a comprehensive written report up, and then next year, as you'll see, we factored them into the program on a Friday in February. I don't know if you see that there. Yeah. She's also invited us, when we do an oversight in KZN, to you know, visit some of the facilities and whatever else falls under that ambit, if I can put it that way. Thank you. But let me leave it there, not preempt what she will be sending to us. Whether we are sitting or not, it will be distributed. Let me make that clear. Now, can we just start with the minutes? September 25th, Thursday, page 1. Page 2. Temporary removal of board members of the National Gambling Board. Those issues. Page 3. Consideration of the request made by yourself, Honourable MacPherson, which I've just made reference to. 9, the resolutions. Let's see if we've tackled this.
Thanks, sir.
We have, actually, and it is a challenge how the program has been working, and anyway, we've done the best we can. I would ask staff in future to reduce some of the space. Look at the huge amount of space on page 3 between 6.4 and 6.5. And then as a result, you've got one line on 4. Just redo the minutes technically, although we will adopt them now. Thank you. Someone to move the adoption for that. Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Seconded by people present are Honourable Liyenge. Next one, 14th of October. That was quite a big one here. That was a Tuesday, page 1. That was all to do, as you can see there, page 1. And if you look at the agenda, the National Gambling Board, the National Regulation.
Can I just check, are these duplicates?
All right, can you say whatever you were going to say? Please come back. We adjourn for a moment.
Thank you.